Let me just apologize for the secretary, Shanaz. She's not in and instead the standing secretary, will Bradley is standing on her behalf. Shanaz is not in because of the, what do you call it? Heat.
EID.
Oh, okay, yeah. I'll help you write it from Ramadan. Do you know the same thing? Yeah, so that, yeah, so she's not in because of that. And I understand we're supposed to have two presentations as we discussed in the committee in the last 2 weeks. But she also told me that the department apologized for the other presentation and they were not ready because they had planned to present it next week. Sorry. I think we'll have to decide as a committee if we do want to have a meeting because myself, I'm here next week. I've got many engagements next week. So we'll have to decide what we want to do. It's up to us.
Not on that, I want to say that if we go beyond the correct press on the question of the question of the question of the
apology, not but I don't think we should go. Well, it depends on members, you know, speaking. It depends on the question that you raise with the presenters. Well, I cannot stop you that no, you can't continue questioning when you have something to ask which you feel that you are concerned about. So the time really has got to be controlled by us than anybody else. So I will, without wasting time, ask the presenters to introduce themselves and then the members also introduce themselves.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Honourable Members, for this opportunity to present on the R&D survey results for 2008-09. This was a survey result that was very important to the department and most of government, which includes yourself. It's not looking good, and you hear as we present the type of concerns that we have. Now, I must admit that the original scoping of the presentation that the Portfolio Committee asked for was with regards to the revised target on R&D towards the 1.5%. And an indication of what the plans are around that. During the presentation, I'll explain why we've been unable to deliver that specific presentation and request an allowance some time before we come back to the committee to present on that. So what we'll talk to most specifically is the 2008-09 R&D survey results. Now, just very briefly in terms of background and, oh yes, the introduction of ourselves. Sorry about that. Marjorie Pius, DDG Social Economics from the Department of Science and Technology.
I'm Godfrey Mashamba, the Director for Science and Technology Development.
Zene Osborne-Mullen, the researcher for the committee. Good morning.
I'm Tali Mawela in the Ministry of DST.
Why don't you hang on? Sorry, I have no idea how to switch it on, but my name is...
Brandon, I'm with PMG.
Sorry.
Marion Shun, DA member of the committee.
Member of the committee.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Bosu Muchumi, member of the committee. Thanks.
Morning. I'm Linda Otoja, whip of the committee from Afghanistan.
I'm Mugabani Owo, the chair of this committee from ANC. Many of you happen to know me because we've been working together for so many years. Okay, thank you very much, members. We can then start the business of the day.
What do we have in terms of the National Army Survey instrument is a means of measuring R&D and most of the expenditure related to it. So it's one of the instruments that the Department of Science and Technology uses to assess, take a pulse rate, let's say, on how well the system is performing. Now, it is very critical for the DST to put up front that the R&D survey as an instrument that is internationally utilized is a proxy measure. So we will never ever, you know, be in a position where we will be able to capture truthfully everything that is spent on R&D. So when we describe it as a proxy measure, we, together with other countries in the world, have accepted that warts and all, it is a very good measure of determining how competitive a country is, because there is empirical evidence that the more you spend on R&D, the more competitive the country is. Now, I said warts and all, but that doesn't mean that, you know, we can have an instrument where you're not able to substantiate your findings or to clarify why you see peaks or troughs or whatever it is from year to year or from decade to decade and so on. So most countries across the world have accepted a particular methodological approach which is outlined in the OECD Frascati Manual. For those committee members who are not aware, the OECD is the Organization for Economic Cooperative Development. And its participation, its membership is mainly the developed world countries. And a few countries like South Africa, Argentina, and so on, that are emerging economies, developing countries, now also subscribe to submitting, measuring their R&D performance and using the OECD guidelines for that. Overall, the survey instruments, and Chairperson and members, you will forgive me if I'm over-explaining. I just feel that in future we will be coming back, and there's an aspect I want to describe to you about quality. So I'm trying to make sure that at this session and in future sessions, we all more or less on the same sheet of paper around it. The survey covers five sectors. We categorize, group, and collect data in these five sectors. The business sector, which is your private companies, the higher education sector, which includes all your universities, the science council, government. Now, you'll note in most areas, science councils and government is added together, reflected under government. So when you see the proportion of government spending on R&D, you must note it includes all of our science councils. And then there's another sector that relates to the not-for-profit sector. Now, the R&D survey produces statistics, measures the spending by each of these sectors, and it measures the intensity, just how much they're spending on R&D, and compares it from 1 year to the next. We as DST can't do this in-house. So we have set up an institutional platform at the HSRC, and we call it CESTI, the Center for Science and Technology Indicators, and Science and Technology Innovation Indicators. So that is CESTI. We have recognized further that just having it as a unit under the HSRC is not good enough. And so we have begun supporting a research chair, because together with SAS South Africa, we realize there's a critical shortage in terms of properly qualified statistician, statistics expert. And so we are, you could almost call it going upstream and creating a pipeline of new statistics capacity. We have interns placed at HSRC doing their masters and doing their doctoral studies. This will ensure that in decades to come, we will be able to measure this kind of R&D information. It also benefits universities as well in the long run with our new technology transfer offices. Universities will be having to capacitate themselves to report much more clearly on R&D expenditure. So the measurement of R&D expenditure, spending by private sector, by government, by the universities in the higher education sector, and not-for-profit is important to us because we believe that it allows us to assess our competitiveness relative to other countries. Now, I did say I was going to have to explain to you why we are not going to report to you on what is happening about the 1.5% target. We note that government has raised the bar on the expenditure target for growth expenditure on R&D, which we call GERD. We previously had a target for 2008-09 of 1%, and the new target is now 1.5%, which we must achieve by 2014. This the target has been set as recently as June, July, when it was formulated in terms of some of the delivery outcomes across the portfolios of a number of ministers, not just the Minister of Science and Technology. So processes are underway right now to formulate how we envisage getting to that 1.5% target. And I ask the committee chair to note that the minister has set up a review committee to study and make recommendations on the readiness of the system to respond to national objectives. This committee has quite recently been to present to us on some of their preliminary findings so that they could go ahead with the phase two part of their study. The phase one part was primarily looking at how well we have responded to a previous OECD report.
I think we don't have what is in
it. This is the only slide.
Okay. Is it the only slide?
It's the only slide that has
slide.
Oh, sorry. I must apologize. This is a slide where I'm just explaining why we are not presenting to you on the 1.5% target. We acknowledge, we note that there's a 1.5% target, that is for 2014. We note also, bring to the committee's attention, that we did not meet the 2008-09 1% target, and yet government has raised the bar. In other words, despite the fact that we have not hit 1%, we did not hit 1% by 2008-09. Government still firmly believes that R&D is an important input in terms of enhancing the competitiveness of the South African economy. And so they still raise the bar. We have no new information for you around how we will reach that 1.5% target because there is a ministerial-led process right now that is looking at how the system should be responding. Phase one was looking at a report on our country's performance that was produced by the OECD in 2007. And they evaluated how we have responded to the recommendations of that report. In phase two, which will be completed in the first half of 2011, is where they will be examining what we should do, even what the department should look like. And that is a set of recommendations that they will be taking through to the minister. So in 2011, we will probably be having a discourse with the parliamentary committee again on this 1.5% target. Now, if we go then directly to what does this 2008-09 R&D survey tell us? It tells us that across the country there was growth. Growth of just under 3 billion rand that was spent on R&D in the country. We do recognize that GDP at that point in time was increasing at a much faster rate than was investment on R&D. And for that reason alone, or let's say to a large degree, we find that we actually slipped back in terms of the percentage of investment in R&D against GDP. In 2007-08, we were riding at 0.93. And that in itself was a slippage from the previous year, which was 0.95. So from 0.95 in 2006-07 to 0.93 in 2007-08, down to 0.92 in 2008-09. There was very, very limited growth on government's part in terms of increasing R&D expenditure. We also know that the bulk of the expenditure increases were from private sector, but private sector was already starting to contract in terms of its expenditure. By the time we hit 2009-10, which we haven't yet measured, we are quite confident that the results are going to deteriorate even further. So that is the period that covers the global economic recession. And we already were receiving some anecdotal indicators that companies were shutting down their research laboratories. So the picture is not looking good for South Africa. The only positive light is that even towards the beginning of the rough time in terms of the economy, we still saw close to 3 billion rand. That is in monetary terms, not percentage-wise. There was actual growth still in R&D expenditure. Now, that is the aggregate measure, the growth expenditure on R&D to GDP, the percentage. It's very important to us. But there are other very critical indicators. And that relates, amongst them includes human capital development. Are we growing scientists? It's one thing to say we're investing in R&D, but it's another issue about whether we are growing our base of scientists and engineers, the people involved in R&D. So we also measure the R&D personnel, and we can see there that there's alarm bells ringing as well. From 2007-08, we've dropped slightly, and this is in terms of full-time equivalents. For the members who don't know what we mean by the full-time equivalents, we recognize that in some universities, there are researchers who teach, and then they spend some of their time doing R&D. So what we do is we only count the time that they actually do R&D. We don't count the teaching time. So when we add it all together, we express it as full-time equivalent. And there we see there has been a drop. On the other hand, in terms of total researchers, meaning there's a possibility that it's shown that there are more researchers entering, but they're not entering fully as researchers. Again, they still are having teaching loads and research loads. We see there's been a very slight increase with a growth of about 64 new researchers coming into the pool. If we look at total researchers per 1,000 of total employment, another key factor, where we say when we look at all of the people employed in South Africa, how many per 1,000 of them are researchers, scientists and engineers? And there's been another drop from 1.5% in 2007-08 down to 1.4% in 2008-09, this critical year where we should have actually been increasing. The total R&D personnel, now the total R&D personnel means you're including researchers and you're even including laboratory assistants. You're looking at everybody involved in supporting the research activity. There we see a decline as well from 2.4% to 2.2. Not percent, that is persons per thousand of the total employment figures in South Africa. Now, the human capital and the numbers of people involved is critical. as is, transformation, particularly as it relates to women, bringing in more women researchers into the research base. And there we can see a slight drop from 40 down to 39. Later on, you'll see that this is not something that we are extremely perturbed about, because relative to other countries, we're actually doing well. We don't want to see a decline, but at the same time, we note that we're not so bad when we compare ourselves with other countries. Total researchers and headcount, now this is regardless of whether they are doing teaching and research or just research on, if we just take them by headcount, then we see from 40,000, we're down to 39,965. There's a slight drop there. Now, this is just a graphical representation that takes into account what has been happening since 1991 to where we are in 2008. And you can see that from the year 2000, from 1997, we've been seeing a very steady increase in expenditure in R&D, right up to the 21 million that we now have in, measured in 2008-09. We are aware that it's going to start easing off unless government does something dramatic to actually accelerate that pace, particularly if the target is now 1.5% of GDP. It's also very reassuring to see that if we remove inflation, if we look at constant rand and we use 2000 as the base year, it still shows a gradual increase. Not as steep as we've seen in terms of nominal rand value, but it shows that there is real growth that has been happening over the last 10 years at least. And then this is percentage-wise, so not in actual rand values. You see what I was speaking about earlier on. In the 2006-07 year, we were really climbing towards getting our 1% target. And then we started easing off with a slight decline. 2007-08, we dropped down to 0.93, and this last measurement of 2008-09, we dropped again the percentage point down to 0.92%. So this is a worrying factor. This is the growth expenditure on R&D of South Africa compared to a range of OECD countries. I've indicated that the main reason we use this indicator is to help us compare how we are doing, because we generally compete with other countries in the world as far as our products, our exports and so on are concerned. And there you see South Africa at 0.92. We are way ahead of Argentina. But it may be when you look at the systems compared to South Africa and Argentina, they invest heavily in science and technology. Their systems are sophisticated, state-of-the-art equipment and infrastructure with limited practice in R&D. But that cannot remain. They will also be turning around to start increasing the spending on R&D, because if you spend on R&D, you become more competitive. Yeah, we may be spending more on R&D than they are. This is in terms of GDP. But we're finding systems crashing all over the show, from police forensics to National Health Laboratory Services. Vaccine production. Those are straightforward science and technology, not R&D. A science and technology system. So we have to try to strike a balance somehow. We find that Russia, Spain, China, economies that were not part of the mainstream of the developed world, the advanced economy, they are now streaking ahead. China's had phenomenal growth in its investments in R&D. The OECD average, we're still very far from it. It's riding at 2.28%. Now, this sounds like a small figure, but if you consider the GDP of these countries, if you look at just Australia's GDP, and you look at our GDP is around 3 trillion or so. if you translated the Australian GDP into rand terms, you're looking at about 50 trillion or so. And then you factor that they're spending 2% of that 50 trillion, and we're spending 0.92% of 3 trillion. Then it comes into the fact that, you know, we are not spending enough on R&D. And even that 1.5% target then becomes very modest. Very modest, very conservative. This is the growth expenditure of selected countries. Now here we try to do a translation for you to show you that if we converted all of the expenditure of these countries into dollar terms, and then we express it in terms of purchasing power parity, we see there is South Africa riding at $4 billion. But you find a country like Australia at 15. This puts it in perspective now. You find ourselves ahead of Argentina still at $2 billion. But look at China at $22 billion. This should be sending alarm bells through us. China at $86 billion. We know that they've got bigger economies. They've got larger economies than ours, but there is still a very strong commitment. That was in 2006. If you look now at, we don't have the figures of some of these countries that we want to compare with for 2008-09, but this is what we will be bringing back the next time we present to you. Because it's always a backward-looking measurement instrument. And as much as we now, having taken this measurement, have submitted our figures to the OECD, which month did we do that? We're submitting it now because we've passed it through the system. They are also submitting to the OECD. So it's only in next year that we'll be able to show you what is the comparison in dollar terms and purchasing power parity across these countries. I should also, while we are just finishing up on this comparison, because we have achieved official statistics status for the R&D survey, from time to time, we have to subject our work to the oversight of the Statistician General. And we did that during the course of last year. And when I'm finished with my presentation, I would like Godfrey to just talk us through what was the response from the Statistician General's office regarding the quality of the methodology and the quality of the statistics of the R&D survey. If this was described in financial audit terms, we would say we got an unqualified audit. So it was a very positive response, and we have maintained, we retained our status as official statistics. I should actually indicate that we are very proud of this, because just a few years ago, the R&D survey used to be contracted out to individuals running CCs and so on. Highly qualified people, experts, but we were very vulnerable, because if they left the country, we would have been left with nobody to actually conduct an R&D survey. And so what we've done is, not only have we institutionalized it and we are building capacity, but we have also, by submitting our methodology to the Statistician General's office, we have achieved status as official statistics. And we now have had that reconfirmed with the quality review. Godfrey will talk about some of the small things that we have to clean up on later. I think that it's important for us to look at human capital, because it's our investment in people and what people are capable of that really makes us competitive. And there you see quite a frustrating profile of South Africa, which is not changing much over the years. We find that the number of full-time equivalents per 1,000 of the people that are employed in this country is only 1.4. For every 1,000 people employed in South Africa, we only have 1.4 full-time equivalent researchers. And there you've got Argentina, 2.9. You've got Japan with 11. You've got Norway with 10. Australia with 8.5. So in other words, we are not producing enough scientists and engineers to actually conduct R&D. Women researchers, as a percentage, this is where I indicated that we are not doing all that badly. There you see us at 39.7 of the researchers in South Africa, and this is at a head count, are actually women researchers. Argentina outstrips us, so in other words, they invest heavily in career spaces for women as researchers, because you have 51 per thousand, or not 51 per thousand, but 51% of the researchers in Argentina are women researchers. You can see that Japan is not doing so well. We're way ahead of them, and yet they are so competitive, but in terms of transformation, South Africa is doing well. And then the numbers of female and male researchers, headcount per sector, is another critical issue for us. Higher education in the universities, there you find the profile is 29% of the researchers are women, and the remainder are male. It introduces a potential policy or government intervention to try and address this, to encourage the universities to look for higher targets in producing female researchers. And at the same time, government itself is not looking good. And government, of course, is an expression of our science council, the researchers in the science environment. There you find the number of researchers, women researchers. Oh, sorry, the numbers, yes. The 29,000 is... No, sorry. They represent the total number of researchers. But what you find is that... I shouldn't have used that word percentage. The numbers of women researchers is less than male researchers in the private sector. Are you okay?
To explain the size of the bar indicates the number in each sector. The data levels indicate the percentage of females in
yes.
those sectors.
Okay, so that makes sense. The second one is 41,400. You half the size of the first one, the higher bar.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll clarify.
Yeah.
The percentage, 41%. Represent the...
No, sorry, these are percentages. These are thousands. These are thousands. If you look along the vertical axis, we go as high as 30,000. In the previous slide, we said that the number in terms of a headcount of researchers, the where is the headcount number? 40,000. Total researchers was 40,000 in 2007. It's now 39,955. So the total number, if you count them individually, South Africa only has 39,955. We have a population of close to 48 million, but we only have
39,955,000.
Yes, I'm coming to that.
That's why we
are unable to understand. Now, if we say the total quantum, 39,000. Then if we measure the from that 39,000, 29,500. 29,500. This vertical bar here is in thousands going up. 39,000. Right? But 29,000 of that, 29,500 is in the higher education sector.
Yes.
The labeling. Okay. But the overall, if we ignore those percentages, if we just ignore the percentages on top of the bars and the slides, and we just look at the color coding, then we note that the picture is not looking good in terms of females to males in all of the sectors. And we believe that government itself has got to play a role in the terms of transformation within the Science Council environment. And some of its in-house institutions that are there. Performance by R&D by sector, this is something we want to maintain, that the private sector spends more. Because if we find that government spends more on R&D, we run the risk that we start crowding out private sector investment, and then what happens is we become uncompetitive, because then we've only got government-sponsored R&D, and government is not usually the best, authority for prioritizing competitive R&D. We see that we've actually increased the proportion of R&D that's done in the business sector, driving at 58.6% compared to 57.7% in the past. We still have the higher education sector maintaining its 19%, which is really third position.
What's
this not-for-profit about that? The not-for-profit is mainly your NGOs, but we can't put them as NGOs because you have other types of organizations that are registered not-for-profit organizations.
So they don't contribute any percentage?
They do, but
because
it's so minimal. 1.2% previously and 1.1% now.
They almost
disappear off the radar screen. And we are concerned about that because there are other countries where the not-for-profit sector actually seriously undertakes R&D, particularly in the environmental sciences and in the social sciences and so on. So we need to look into this. In-house R&D expenditure by sector, yeah, we are looking at whether the private sector performs its R&D itself or whether it contracts it out. And we see that in 2007-08, 57% of the R&D was done by businesses themselves. The rest they had contracted it out to universities, to science councils, and so on. In 2008-09, there was some growth. So private sector is actually doing a little bit more of their own R&D, in-house R&D. Government, there's been a decrease in terms of in-house R&D, and yeah, government, remember, no, that's just government. So yeah, you're looking at government agencies like weather services, police, forensics, national health laboratory services, and so on. The science councils, there's been a decrease in terms of in-house. We have to ask questions because their mandate is R&D, and this would suggest that they are contracting out some of the R&D. But it's most likely that it's R&D where they are actually doing it in partnership, collaboration with a university and so on. Higher education, there you can actually see now the reverse. There's an increase also in R&D that they are contracting out. The not-for-profit sector, we see also more is being done in-house. From 1.2% being done in-house, there is now only 1.1% of their work that is being done in-house.
I'm just confused by this.
What do you mean? I mean, is it done in-house?
Yes.
I mean, higher education, how can they only do 20% in-house? Where would the other 80% be? I mean, the higher education aren't going to contract 80% of their research to somebody else, surely. That's why they're higher education.
Yes, but I think what we are missing in this area is of the total amount that they spent on R&D, a record of what they do with the grants that they get from the Department of Education, because it's included in their total baseline grant from government. Here you have, let's just go back. Yes, but that's the tracking the flows. Yeah. it doesn't answer the members' question about why would they...
This slide is not about the in-house, but the quantum of spending. Why the word in-house? Because if it's in-house, it's meaningless. If it's not in-house, it makes sense.
Yes, I think you have a point there. It's actually a translation of this slide.
Yes.
It's actually... Yes, gotcha.
I don't think it's
labeled incorrectly as a meeting. It's not in-house, it's just a profile of the shift from one period to the other. The major flows of funding, this is a question where we will see where the funding is sourced from and who actually performs the R&D. So business, of that total of 21 billion that we said is the spending in South Africa, business spends 8.973 billion on R&D. And it spends it on its own R&D. It gives part of that, in fact, the 8,339,000,000 goes into its own laboratory, does that research itself. It grants 153 million to government institutions like CSR and so on to perform research for it. If you follow the red arrows that are going away from the business figure, it grants 454 million. In R&D to universities in the higher education sector. And it grants 27 million rands worth of R&D to not-for-profit institutions. So that is how business spends its R&D. Government commits 9,498,000,000 in R&D. So if we follow the pale blue lines, we'll see that some of that R&D grant money from government goes to the business sector, and that is a total of 2.5 billion. This, I think, is predominantly through your instruments like SRIP, the Innovation Fund, even through the, not so much through the IDC, because they invest in business entities, but most of the instruments that give R&D grants to business. Government to its own set of institutions, which is science councils and so on, government gives 3,671,000,000. Government gives the universities in the higher education sector 3.2 billion. And it gives the not-for-profit sector 53 million in money for research and development. This would be mostly into social sciences type research, policy research, that not-for-profit institutions undertake on behalf of government. Then there's foreign funding, where we have been performing very well in terms of securing money from foreign governments and foreign agencies for R&D that is performed here in the country. We find that the private sector is doing remarkably well in terms of accessing foreign funds to perform R&D, 1.396 billion. So 1 billion, almost 1.5 billion, is the private sector gets from foreign grants. Government agencies like CSR and MINTEC and Geosciences and so on, they secure from foreign donors 445 million, and the universities, they have been able to secure almost as much as government agencies. They've been raking in from abroad about 410 million rand in R&D. Not-for-profit, 143 million. And we believe that that's a sector that can do more in terms of accessing R&D funds from foundations and so on that are based, that are global foundations, foreign foundations. Now, when we look at another aspect at the performance, we see then business having received its own money, used its own money, received money from government, from other sources, and from foreign sources. It performs a total of 12 billion rands worth of R&D in the country. Government agencies, $4 billion. Higher education, $4 billion. And not-for-profit, $241 million. So the bottom block show you the amount of money that is spent by the performers, those who are actually doing the R&D. And when we talk about this category of other, it's such small amounts that it's very difficult to actually track down or to categorize them appropriately. So we collect them together under other. Now, if we look at another aspect that is very important to us, and that is, in which areas are they doing research? These institutions and organizations that are performing R&D in the country. We can categorize them in terms of the engineering sciences, in terms of the natural sciences, the medical and health sciences, information, computer and communication technologies, social sciences and humanities, applied sciences and technologies, and agricultural sciences. We look at what is the quantum of research that's happening in each of these categories. And we see that overall, percentage of GERD, the engineering sciences are performing more compared to what they were performing in the previous year. And now 24% of the R&D is in the engineering sciences. There's a very slight increase in the natural sciences. From 20.4%, they've moved up to 20.6%. The medical and health sciences, there's been an increase, and the information, computer and communication technology has actually dropped from 13.9% to 13.1%. So we see that there's less R&D that's being performed, and we can actually see where the contractions are happening. In the social sciences, there's been a very marginal increase. Applied sciences and technologies, there's actually been a decrease. And this is worrying, given our developmental state. Agricultural sciences, very alarming. There has been a very dramatic decrease, percentage-wise, from 6.8% down to 5.5%. So these are signals that the parliamentary committee should be reading into investments in R&D and sectors where there is weaknesses in terms of performance of R&D. I would say that this would actually almost be motivation for a joint meeting with the portfolio on agriculture and some of the other areas. The gross expenditure on R&D by type of research, this is something we also look at. Are they performing? Is the system performing basic research? Is it performing applied research that is more relevant to industry and even more relevant experimental development? We say experimental development because it includes technologies that may be developed as well. And the bulk of South Africa's R&D, which is not uncommon to other countries across the world, is in the experimental development arena. It's research that is very close to market interest, to the interest of industry. And not only industry, but also in terms of service delivery. Service delivery, whether it is supply of energy, or it's a supply of fuel, or it's a supply of vaccines, and so on. Applied research still has a large proportion, and of course, as is consistent with many countries across the world, even developed countries, fundamental basic research, which some argue is for the realms of the very elite, is a much smaller proportion of total R&D. Basic research as a percentage of GDP, 2008, or the latest year available, if we compare it with other countries in the world, we see that we're not doing all that badly in basic research. This is where I said it's consistent, generally. Of course, countries like France, we're not going to comment on Korea just yet, United States, Australia, this has been a practice, heavy investment in basic research. But with countries that we would normally compare ourselves with, Argentina, China, the Russian Federation, we at that 0.19%, it is reasonable. Now, the rationale about why some countries invest so heavily in basic research is that new inventions generally require a strong base of fundamental investigation. And if you don't have much of that, then really all you're doing is you're tinkering with existing technologies and existing known science. But the production of new knowledge, basic knowledge, that is something that is demonstrates a very mature science system, and we don't actually have that just yet. So the ambitions about getting to 51% in fundamental science is where we would like to be one day, but it's not really something that we are actually going to be chasing immediately. Okay. So, Chair and members of the committee, that gives you an overview of what the investment profile has looked like in the 2008-09 year. It's not a good picture. There are a number of areas where there's concerns around the overall quantum of investments, concerns around human capital, concerns around certain sectors where we're seeing there are weaknesses and decreases, significant decreases. And then, of course, the transformation picture in terms of increasing the number of women in spending on it. And then, see, I had also indicated that I would like Godfrey to just give an indication of some of the recommendations that came from the Statistician General in terms of how we conduct this survey.
Thank you. Firstly, if we can go back to the slide on women, I just found how those data have been presented. Actually, the same thing you're explaining is not enough in terms of spending. The size of the bar indicates the number in that category, and the 29% actually on the first slide is the percentage of women that are in the higher education, etc. I've just looked back to the data that we used to generate that. For example, in the business sector, we have about 8,000. We have about 30% here, being male, and females is 39%. And then in government, it's 58% male, and then 41% female. Thanks, I just wanted to clear that. If we go to the quality review.
I understand the graphic and the graphical representation of that. You see, this business, this block, what it reflects, what it is, that's right, isn't it? Now, and that one reflects what it is, that's right. Now, it's not very clear according to this representation. How you can have that one at 29.5%, which is exactly against that graph, isn't it? And then you have here something which is about 8,000, but having 41,000 representation. It doesn't make sense. You understand what I'm saying?
If I can just help, sorry, Chairperson, I think I'll be able to do that. I'm going to try. This 29, which is the same, should actually be shown against this purple bar.
Sir, may I help you? My colleague's not reading the document. It's 18 here, it's very clear. The 29 is said to be here. It says here, this is 29.5.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm reading the face, but it is percentages. I think that was one mistake that we've made also. But the percentages are on the wrong bar.
Yeah.
That's
it.
Okay, great.
Thanks for that correction. In terms of the quality review, the R&D survey has been granted official statistics data. For the 2001 survey, and then at the time there was a limited set of dimensions that were used. So Statistics South Africa over the past 3 years or so, they have developed what they call the South African Statistical Quality Assessment Framework. What it does that the statistics in general in terms of the Statistics Act. Has authority to authorize certain statistics as part of the official statistics. So the criteria there being at the high level that whoever produces such statistics produces it to meet the needs that are beyond their own. In this instance, DST produces the R&D statistics not only to support itself, but got a variety of other users outside the DST. The other aspect is the one of sustainable service, that the service of production of such statistics must be for a considerable longer time than of a one-off nature. And the other thing is the one of that such a producer of statistics should actually be part of the membership of the national statistics system. The national statistics system is a virtual arrangement that Statistics South Africa coordinates of all the producers of statistics in the country to share in experiences and best practices on how this work should be done on statistics collection for official purposes. So there are 8 dimensions that we have looked at. We did this over the past year. Under the supervision of South Africa, the 8 dimensions. We looked at all the criteria that are there, and then assessed the compliance of the levels of compliance of the R&D survey to those, and then a number of areas have been identified for improvement. For instance, if I have to read the dimensions quickly. There's a dimension of relevance. What it means is that the needs of the users are known or are well articulated in the production of statistics. The issue of timeliness, that the statistics becomes available as soon as it is possible to be useful. The issue of accuracy, that the statistics presented should be accurate. Accessibility, that it should be available to a wide range of users as much as possible. Interpretability, easy to interpret. Some of these dimensions fit into each other, like the one of accessibility, interpretation, and methodological soundness. The methodologies should be well explained in such a way that it makes it easy to interpret. The issue of coherence, that the current survey should actually help us understand also how it links up to the previous surveys and across a range of statistical product studies. We need to be able to understand how these statistics is interpreted in the context of the broader set of economics statistics in the country. So we have actually started to implement some of the recommendations from that.
But in those dimensions, I think we have missed 2 important points, which is cost benefit, because it's very important, I think, and even user benefit.
Some of those we find that they are embedded as a part of the detailed criteria.
saying that. It's because it can be made user friendly, but it, you find it probably in terms of cost, the users can't benefit. But also in terms of the input money that you've done against what it's supposed to produce as a benefit, that's a cost benefit, which is a very important dimension.
Thank you, sir. It will be something that we need to pay attention to. Under these dimensions, as I said, the detailed set of criteria, some of which has to do with the institutional arrangements for production of these statistics, whether it's bound and sustainable. Also looking at the issue of cost. We have started a process of implementing some of the recommendations. Just last month, there was a meeting between the Director General of the Department and the Solicitor General, where they were actually adopting the quality declaration statement. What it actually says is to reaffirm that R&D survey is still recognized as official statistics, and then it also gives provision for that within a certain time, over the period of the next 2 years, there will be a gradual implementation of these recommended improvements to make sure that it actually strengthens its position there to meet the new requirements of the SASCAF framework. Some of the things that we've been doing over the course of this year is the workshop with the respondent group, the higher education institutions. We've had two workshops, one in Cape Town and one in Pretoria, of the universities, to actually dig deeper into what are the issues that they experience in terms of responding to the survey, what does it cost them in terms of the time and effort to complete the survey, how to make it simpler, and how to improve levels of compliance and timely response or type of responses. And we've got very useful feedback from there. One of the things that we actually need to act on immediately with the survey 2009 test survey, which is on the field, is the one of the enforcing this mandatory issue. The universities are public, especially the public education. They are public institutions that are largely funded by government, and they are obliged to actually respond to this kind of survey. And then the other thing is of a technical nature, that we also need to improve the usage of available administrative data about institutions to strengthen the reconciliation of data and data accuracy. We are also having engagement with various departments, but this we are doing at a very targeted level, that there are certain departments where we know for sure that there are significant R&D and science investments made, but then we have been experiencing problems in terms of returns of questionnaires. So we are actually engaging with them to find ways of improving that. In terms of the integrity and improving the whole quality of the survey, the DG and Statistician General meeting last month resolved on forming a sort of a permanent structure called an approval committee, technical approval committee, that will, as these results become available, it will go through such a committee for it to be taken through a more rigorous process of certification before it is published. So those are some of the things that we are doing, amongst others. Also, the user interface of saying how do we engage with the users of this information. On two fronts, we are planning to develop a website. We have actually started on that web page that will actually provide a more details on the R&D surveys and science and broader set of science technology innovation indicators, which will be located within the department's website, and the engagements that we are having at an international level with the group called the National Experts on Science and Technology Indicators. We just had one meeting last week, which was very useful in terms of conscious and changing experiences about a this nature of studies and the measurement for the science system. It helped to come back here and implement some of the improvements that are recommended in expert meetings like that. And internally in the country, we also engage our policy researchers in this aspect. Thank you.
That group come from that expert group?
The national expert, NESTI expert group, is within the OECD as part of the working group under the OECD. Yes. South Africa is very respected in that grouping. South African experts have actually written a document that was discussed and is soon to be adopted to be the annexure to the Frascati Manual. That document outlines the challenges of R&D measurements in developing countries. It was written through the UNESCO Institute of Statistics with input from the group that we mentioned earlier, the Center for Science, Technology, Innovation Indicators here, and it's adopted as a standard to become an annexure to the measurement of science and technology innovation.
I'm asking that I suspected that that expert group would be coming from the OECD, and I once raised a question here with a DG. I asked him, why do we only use OECD to benchmark our standards? Because there are many other standards. For instance, that Frascati manual, there is an auto manual. You see, so why do we use one and the same source instead of using different sources so as to be able to know where we are? You see, that's my problem.
Add on a most important dynamic. What the Statistician General Office and this quality framework is now demanding of us is actual proof, if we want to retain our status, that these statistics are relevant. And it talks to the point you raised about user benefits. Godfrey's indicated that there's been workshops and sessions with the data providers, but the body, the users that are most important to us is actually this portfolio committee. And if this portfolio committee is not using the statistics, then we are in trouble, because then it means there's something wrong with our statistics, that it's not useful to the committee to probe and to question investments that are happening. It's important for the minister, it's important for Treasury and so on, but it is most specifically important to this committee. And so not just this presentation of the results is important, but there needs to actually even be follow-up, whether it's in terms of questions that don't just relate to the department's work, but that call for information from the deans of universities, you know, as to what measures to promote growth in women researchers. The Science Council, in terms of growth in women researchers, questions around the different fields, like in terms of agriculture, you know, the drop in that is evident that we are seeing. Because this type of instrument, it just shows you where there's a noise in the signal, something's knocking there, that there's a problem. And that noise is going to be read and understood and then action taken. So when we get the next quality assessment done of things, a very critical thing for us is going to be to prove that we don't just conduct the survey, print the documents, and it lies and gathers dust somewhere. That is something I wanted to bring to the fore very much. Now, I also wish this to be highlighted in this meeting, that we don't only do the R&D survey. We also have been conducting through SESTI, this HSRC unit that we set up, the innovation survey. Now, the innovation survey is different in that all it does is it surveys the private sector. It doesn't look at what government's doing. It doesn't look at what the universities are doing. It just looks at the private sector. And it doesn't ask about whether they're spending on R&D, but it asks whether the profits that they've been making, whether it's because there has been some new innovation introduced. So we need to also come and present to you on the innovation survey. There's another instrument that we utilize. In fact, South Africa has been utilizing it for a very long time. That is the measurement of the technology balance of payments, in terms of how much are we importing in technology and how much are we exporting. And the result is called the technology balance of payments. We never have to calculate it. It's always been calculated by the Reserve Bank. And for quite some time, we've been arguing that there must be something wrong in their calculations. Perhaps not, but we actually need to check how valid, what approach are they using, what methodology are they using. I'm happy to report that direct and constant engagement with the Reserve Bank has finally led to a position that the Reserve Bank has adopted, that they are going to utilize an approach that we've advocated in terms of what must be taken into account and what must be reported. And in 2011, June, when they produce their quarterly bulletin, which the Reserve Bank publishes, it will be in line with what the DSC asks. And this will be a first for South Africa, that they will be doing that. There's another instrument that we utilize, which is a new, relatively new instrument. It's called the Science and Technology Activities Expenditure Report for Government. Now, bear in mind, I said, we do the innovation survey for the business sector. In government, we look at their investments in science and technology activities. Now, remember, it's to do research allows you ultimately to become competitive. But to spend on science and technology activities means that you are spending on improving the sophistication of your science or your technical infrastructure. So even the purchase of new computers is regarded as a science and technology investment of a particular order, whether it's not innovative, it's just maintaining the system. If police forensics upgrade their equipment, their laboratories and so on, it's a form of science and technology investment. There's another category in science and technology activities which relates to training. So we measure training, that departments spend on. We measure training, but not just any training, not about communications training or HR training. It is science and technology related training. And then we measure the investments across government departments on innovation, which includes R&D, but it goes beyond that. We've already produced a report which we will be coming to present to this committee, where it looks across all government departments. And we're happy to announce that we worked very closely with Treasury on this. And that report is produced now every year in the Treasury's E&E. So if members were to take the new E&E, you would see again certain departments that DST has got them to report on science and technology activities in three categories: on innovation, on science and technology training, and on science and technology services, which relate to forensics or health laboratory or whatever the case is. Which now brings me to the question you raised, Chair. There's the Oslo manual, there's the Canberra manual, but the important thing is they measure different things. With the Canberra one, it measures human capital. The focus is on measuring, and it uses mainly, we would use the HIMSS data that comes from the Department of Higher Education and Training. With the Oslo manual, it's focused primarily on innovation. So it wouldn't, R&D would be a small component reported into there. Then you've got another one which actually informs our instrument that we're using on the science and technology activities with government departments and treasury. And that one uses the UNESCO guidelines on science and technology activities. Now, if we look at the science and technology activities, we say if it's measuring training and services and innovation and R&D, it's simply looking at how modern, how are you modernizing, how are you upgrading your whole science system. If you come to R&D, the R&D survey is using the OECD one. Strictly, we are chasing an assessment on how competitive in terms of the generation, because R&D is a measure of generating new knowledge, new patents, new publications, and so on. So I think what we need in our next presentation is to just report, just an overview always of how are we doing if we look at the Oslo, how are we doing if we look at Canberra or human capital, how are we doing on UNESCO, and then on the R&D survey using the OECD plus planting manual.
Okay, I'll allow members, but again, it's very important that we compare, because if you go to, you know, this is the Western approach. If you go to the Far Eastern approach, they use totally different standards, and they are also very successful. So you need to look into all those kinds of things. That's all that I'm saying. Yeah. Right. Let me allow members to interact with you then. I've got that, do you hear? I've got you here on that side, I've got the Smith in that order.
Okay, it's quite a technical presentation, highly academic. I accept what I think three questions. I'm a bit worried, and maybe you allay my concern, that researchers do teaching and research. Why are they allowed to do that? Is it not compromising what then is supposed to be done and the outcome? You have raised a number of the clients, but you have not, I don't know whether that's your brief or your mandate to indicate why those declines. The challenge that you've always been asking in terms of some of the challenges on research is that we, it's my own view about researchers, and I'm subject to correction, some of the researchers how that research is being done, in my view, it's not a research that is for the covers the entire demographics of the of whatever area or the country or whatever. I'm raising that because you said the what's this? The OECD people who constitute that are those of the developed countries, and I started to be scared because in my view the interests of the developed countries will always be different from that of the developing countries. And if then that is it's quite I'm a bit concerned. I do think that for me it's there is no emphasis in the report about the deadlines that are doing good as a country in R&D, which that has got its own political and ideological history. How best can that? I don't know whether I'm asking a question, a relevant question from you. How best can that be? Because it means it's something that we are to stay with it, because we are. This is a more of a system that has been there, and this government is expected. This administration is expected to make a turnaround. I'm raising that because you talked about transformation, not about only transformation in terms of women. For me, it's also the transformation on how the research is conducted. Can I be told if I'm wrong or right? Because transformation is too broad. It can't just be narrowed in terms of women. The entire system of research needs to be transformed. I think here it's only those more, you know, those more political and ideological questions for me that are really a problem. But if this is not being transformed, this country will always be where it is, and all these challenges will still be there. And what is it that you think can be done? And I'm happy that you are saying we in the next presentation will have the whole picture of the state of administration through government, through the department. I think those are the few questions that I have, and the others there. It's unfortunate that there was that confusion in that slide, and which I think that will be corrected. But I think thank you for the report.
Next member.
Thank you, Chair. A couple of questions. Just some lots of housekeeping things first. This review committee, is that the same ministerial committee that we were supposed to have talking just next week, or is there another one? Because the wording that you used to describe its task was different. Is there more than one ministerial review committee on the go? So it is the same one. Okay, thank you. This research chair on statistics, is that a proper name? Where is it based? Is it actually operational now? Who is the chair, and how many students does it have? So that would be good to know. And a couple of things that I'm particularly concerned about is the R&D tax incentive. The report is due to be tabled in July. It hasn't been, and one can only assume that perhaps the reports are more dismal than last year's were. And if so, can we have some indication of what is happening with that report? And one assumes that you've had discussions with the businesses in perhaps still sorting out what can be done to improve the R&D expenditure in this country. Can you give us some sort of feedback on why they're not spending as much as perhaps they should be? What are the inhibitors? I think that it's probably wider than tax. It's possibly, you know, labor laws or cost of borrowing money or whatever it is that is inhibiting them. And I was told that one of the reasons why a lot of people don't apply for this R&D tax rebate is that it's too bureaucratic, and that they would rather have project funding. And the other one was The businesses actually have far too many risks to cope with right now, and actually, you know, invest in risky ventures such as technology. I want to know, you know, what has been your response to that. Also, when we had a presentation by NACI on their annual report, they also expressed concern with this technology balance of payments calculation. And I can't remember exactly, but I think they said something about they felt that the OECD way of measuring it was perhaps out of kilter with us, and that whether we should be adopting to them or whether we should be actually developing our own way of doing it. Have you discussed with Matthew what their concerns on that are? Those are actually my thoughts.
Thanks, Jen. Thank you for the presentation. I thought it was very good, overdue. I've got a few concerns or a few questions. The first one, you know, is this issue, the perennial issue. It's in the slide that you didn't give us that you put up that we got a fresh copy of afterwards. You said that the new target of 1.5% is only formulated in June, July this year. Now, this really frustrates me. Two budget debates ago, I raised the matter of when are we going to be 1.5%. The minister said, no, we are 1.5%. Last year, when we had budget hearings prior to the budget, either the DG or acting, well, somebody said, no, it's not actually a target yet, it's just an aspiration. Then the minister, when I said that in the budget debate, the minister jumped at me and said, no, it's a target. We've accepted 1.5%. Where do you get that nonsense from? Now, you're saying only this June and July was it formulated as a target. That seems to be very weird. Can you please explain that? Secondly, you mentioned that there was a problem of measurement in the past because it was outsourced and there's always a fear that people would disappear and then what happens, and so it's all being done in-house. But it seems that you've located it in HSRC. So the capacity to do the measuring is not actually within the department. It's in a paraspatial, which also is relying on academics who also could just pack up their bags and disappear tomorrow as well. So what's the difference between being outsourced, well, doing the way you were doing it before and giving it to the HSRC to do? Then, I must say, the slide, the table one indicators, I thought was extremely disappointing. I mean, if you look at the total researchers increasing that by 64, and all the other indicators down, I mean, it's a really woeful situation. Yeah, that one there is woeful. Of course, that relates to the topic that we were dealing with last week, I mean, of human capacity problems. And at the end of the day, we're not going to solve any of the problems unless those figures are growing at a much faster rate. So, I mean, even saying static is one thing, but physically going down is completely scary. And frankly, it makes a mockery to me of the 1.5. Now, I know we're not discussing 1.5, but I will make a comment. I don't think we've ever met one yet. I mean, one has been a target for donkey's years. We've never made 1%. Not one. We approximate it, but we never get there. And even now, when I target 1.5, we're still around one, as far as I know, if not there. So that's the concern. Then I must say this next slide, figure one. Can you just go to figure one, Marjorie? I don't know. Okay, this one. You know, you were commenting that that in real terms, you know, that we still had growth. Now, frankly, if you look at that pink line, or the purple line, there has been growth from 2001. But for the last 2 or 3 years, it's been essentially flat. So you may have had nominal growth up to 21, but your real growth is virtually nil. Now, how do you have, at a time, that's the booming economy time, that booming economy, 2005, 6, and 7 was booming. How do you have real growth which is virtually flat? Because since then, of course, we've had the financial crisis and all the things you said just now where people are bombing out of R&D, so you're expecting even worse figures. But can you explain to me why, during our boom years, expenditure was flat in real terms? And then also, I'm actually a bit puzzled, because if you look at this book here, this one here, right? Every slide in here is the same as the ones you've given out here. They're all identical, except for the little arrow in the slide 6. Except for this one, figure one here, totally different to your figure one here. And I don't understand that, because what this one says is, if you look at the one you showed up here, what it shows you is you had nominal growth going from about, 8 billion to 21, and in real terms from similar, nearly 8 to 11. This figure here, in figure one, shows the two lines are parallel. How do you get real growth and nominal growth being parallel to each other? Then also, you know, you make the point, in fact, you can see it more in this slide here than that one, but it's the same issue, really. The question is, okay, one question is, why has it suddenly been flat during our boom years? But the reverse of the question is, why were some years good? I mean, you can't see it there because the way the graph is not stretched towards the same scale as this one. But here, the arrow, the line, you see, is far clearer up. The question is, why do we have all those good boom years of both constant and nominal growth, and suddenly, okay, flattened? One question is, why did it flatten? The reverse question is, why was it so good in all those years? What were we doing right in those years that we're not doing now to account for that discrepancy? Yeah, then the next slide. Yeah, in your presentation, sorry. Yeah, that one. You see, I know you don't want to go beyond 2008, but I was really alarmed when you started saying, well, of course, you haven't got the data of 2010 yet, still being measured, but, you know, business is not spending, and government's not spending, everybody's not spending. It would seem, from the comments you're making, that figure from 0.92 is going to carry on dropping. We're going to be back to something else. And, you know, that's all very well. If the economy were booming, like it was there, and it came down, you could say those percentages are actually excused by the fact that the economy is going well, and therefore, as a percentage, your figures will look, you know, negative. But when the economy is going flat, if you're still going to go down, then you've really got a problem. And it suggests that there's a complete lack of spending now. I know we're doing historical figures here, but is it the case that, in fact, nominal spending is actually negative now? I mean, has it gone down in the last couple of years? Because if that's the case, I don't know how we're ever going to get 1% below 1.5%. And then share not much more, just very quickly. There's a slide, figure 4, which shows the FTE equivalent, if you can get to that one, Marjorie. FTE, no, carry on. Further on. Yeah, there, that one. See, this figure is also very alarming, but it's actually a lot worse than it. To me, it's a lot worse than it is there. Because what that's showing that of, you know, how many people are in FTE research per 1,000 total employment? The thing is, those countries have much higher employment rates than us. Now, we've got unemployment rate, depending how you want to define it, you know, of up to 40%. So the 1.5, I mean, the 1.4%, if you're talking about, if you did it on a per capita basis instead of percentage employed, your figure would make us, will be much, much, much worse than that. So, I mean, I think that's a misleading statistic in some ways. I know it's fair, it measures to those who are employed. But, you know, it would suggest that, for example, Japan is 11, we would, you know, they're 10 times more than us. In fact, they're probably 20 times better than us because of our unemployment rate. So there's just one more mountain to climb. And then, nearly done.
Remember that they said they want to finish early,
yeah,
and
no,
they must not blame me when
it's right. No, Chair, what was said was the person requested to be excused if we hadn't finished, which is fine. The last one is, there's a slide on the research field, and you mentioned that we should perhaps meet with agriculture and other people to talk about this. Yeah, I agree fully. There's actually a very interesting addendum we hear our researchers supplied us. There's an article here by, first of all, David Winwin. David Baldwin. And on the back, there's a slide showing where, in the opinion of the author at least, there are shortfalls in R&D. And the biggest one is, in fact, the agricultural stuff, you know, food products, beverages, and tobacco. It compares where we should be with what we are now. And there's this monstrous gap. And in other areas, it's showing we're actually spending a lot more than we need to be spending, which is a bit weird. I don't know if you're familiar with this, but if you are, could you comment on this slide here? Because it suggests underspending in some areas, but also overspending, and the overspending I don't really understand. Thanks. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I must also add my words to thank the presentation. Chair, there's one little thing that I think I need to clarify. They say that 1% but they could not meet it. But I didn't hear them showing us why they did not meet the target that they set for themselves. And tied with that was my colleagues have already asked that question, and why, therefore, the government decided that notwithstanding the fact that they failed to meet that target, then they raised the bar to 1.5.
Thank you very much. I think I have just one or two questions myself. If you can go back to that slide where there's a declining GDP from 0.95 down to 9.92. Well, one member just actually identified the challenge that once this curve starts to go down like this, it's not going to come back. Scientifically, it's like that because that's what we call a saturated point in innovation, and you need to change the way you do things in order to pick it up again. So how are you going to solve that problem? The second point is that for as long as we stick to old ways of doing things, which is why you find that we are not going to improve just as one member has said. So I think that in the next presentation that you will bring here, you must come with some proposals of what you want to do to change that situation. I know this does not depend on you as a department, but it depends on you as a driver for other departments to change the way they do things. Otherwise, you will never get it right. Thank you. That's all that I wanted to say.
There was a mix of questions and comments, and I'll try to respond to the questions and just recognize the comments for DST to follow up on. On the question of why do we actually find researchers doing teaching as well as research, it's actually very critical. Your researchers are what we describe as the top echelon in terms of expertise, in terms of our scientists and our engineers. And we would actually urge them, we actually do urge them to do teaching, to contribute to growing a stronger base. In fact, besides the academic teaching of getting youngsters through university undergraduate studies, we encourage them more and more to help us grow new researchers with research degrees that is recognized in the levels of master's and doctoral. Only when students get to a master's degree are they doing a research degree. And so this is why even when we put in place instruments like the Saatchi research chairs, a critical criteria for funding is that they must accept that they will take research students at master's and doctoral level. So there has to be that mix of teaching and research. And worldwide, this is the case, and this is why when you want to look at that university professor, you can't just count his time and the cost of employing him as research, because you know he's doing teaching, and so therefore you have to actually get him to report on how much of his time. He spends 50% of his time maybe on teaching and 50% on research, or it could be 80-20. And then we add all of the research amount and we come up with this figure of full-time equivalent. And then we know we've separated out of the teaching. When we talk about the decline that we've been seeing in R&D investments and whether we understand and can explain what is happening. When we first came to the portfolio committee after we got the results on 2006-07, we were very pleased because we saw there was an increase from 0.92 to 0.95. And we thought we are on our way to reaching the target of 1%. But during that period, 2006-2008, is where the economy grew at a pace that far exceeded all of our expectations, both government, business, and society in general. The pace at which the economy was growing was much faster. And so we were caught, we will say, flat-footed. Not only government, but even the private sector. Because we didn't increase the pace at which we were investing in R&D. So basically what it says, the R&D was growing, but it wasn't growing as fast as GDP was growing. And this meant you actually saw, when you said R&D in proportion to GDP, it showed a lower percentage. But we know that it didn't mean that we were not spending more on R&D. And the same goes for the 2008-09 results. The GDP was growing, but R&D was not growing as fast. Was growing, but not as fast. And so therefore, you got a smaller percentage in terms of the relationship between the two. So we must know that we can go to any country and we can say, no, as a country, we have been spending more on R&D, but we have not been spending as much as we want of our GDP. And that's the difference in that decline. Now, most smart nations know that if your GDP is growing, your economy is growing, by spending more on R&D, you'll be able to grow the GDP even faster than that. But we have been hit by this global recession. So even where we now have the opportunity to ramp up R&D, we've been denied that opportunity because of the economic slump that the whole world is being subjected to. So it takes me to the other question. When we go into we've been going into a decline, not so much a decline, but a slower rate of growth in the economy. And R&D has also been declining. We cannot honestly say what our findings will be for 2009-10. Because the GDP has also slowed, the rate, not that it's shrunk, but the rate has slowed, and your R&D has slowed as well. They may just come out in 2009 at 0.92. In actual fact, we may be surprised, and it could come at 0.98 or 1%. What has hit South Africa, as it happened elsewhere in the world, is something that was unforeseen. And that is a blight on the bookmark of the book of the economists all over the world. It wasn't anticipated, and the scale at which the economy slumped wasn't anticipated. So the jury is out. That's the only thing I can say about what the 2009-2010 results are going to be from that survey. We're hoping that it's not going to be as severe as we had thought it is, because we know that government attempted as much as possible not to cut R&D budgets. That was one thing we can be proud of with South Africa. Other countries like the UK and so on were slashing budgets on R&D. Private sector, we know some companies closed down their laboratories, especially foreign companies. They pulled they took their R&D offshore, or they just shut it down completely. So we don't know the full extent yet of what has happened, because you can't measure R&D that's happening now, because companies have got to wait for the year to end, and then they've got to complete the survey. By the time you get it, you're always looking at old information. So we can only give you 2008-09, and next year we'll come to you and we'll give you 9-10. We'll always be looking back at what the expenditure was like.
From that argument, then I want you to explain how then do you explain the Chinese boom versus the GDP in this ratio.
Yes. If we look at the situation of China, they began designing a new economy for themselves primarily in the period 2008 2005-2006, which means that in 2006, and I sat with my Chinese counterparts, who boasted they had trebled. You see the increase of ours when we were boasting that we were going up. They said and reported that they had trebled their government investment in R&D. And you must also factor into account that even though there is the economy is opening up, investment decisions are still highly controlled in the Chinese environment. We are coming to you to report on what the whole country has spent on R&D. And the question about why we didn't hit that target is a very difficult one for us to answer, because we are not, as DST, responsible at the end of the day directly for SASL's decision on how much it's going to spend on R&D, for AngloGold's decision on how much they're going to spend on R&D. We have very little control over this. What we do is we put the tools together to get them to report to us. And when we are concerned that business or even government is not spending as much as we think they should spend, all we can do is work through our minister and this committee to use different ways of encouraging them to understand that they should be spending more and what the benefit of their spending more on that R&D. So it's a target against which we have all failed, every one of us. They say don't shoot the messenger, and that's what God said. I came in here very nervously. It's to show that as a country, business, South African businesses, government, the universities, the science council, we've not spent as much as we should on R&D. We should also factor that with most of South African enterprise, and when I say enterprise, I'm going beyond the private sector. I'm even including the state-owned enterprises. There's a particular period within which we are moving, and that is about modernization. So you're getting upgrades across all your parastatals, your state-owned enterprises. I think we will ride a wave after this where you'll see more of the investments moving away from capital upgrades, recapitalization. At the moment, they're getting turnkey solutions. Plants are being built and so on. The future investments are going to have to be in R&D. But we need to actually start planning for that now. Chairperson, I can go on and on, and you can go on and on, and all the committee members. I think this kind of discussion warrants a workshop or some of that. If I can then turn to some of the other responses. If we look at the issue of countries like India and so on, we actually never see a report on R&D expenditure coming from India into the OECD. What the OECD does is it extracts India figures from UNESCO reports. So it's true that there are some East Asian countries that don't use the OECD framework in terms of preparing reports on how they invest in R&D. And there are many of them that don't actually report. You'll find Korea as reflected in some of the tables, but that is specifically South Korea, which has a very strong alliance with the United States, who is a strong member of the OECD. So there's different geopolitical reasons why some members follow a particular approach and others. India, for one, even challenged a United Nations methodology on measuring technology achievement. India resists very strongly most Western forms of measuring development. But India is also a country of extremes. And that is possibly one of the reasons why, because they know that if you just measure their innovations, they may stand out, but it's not a reflection of how the country as a whole is doing. It would create a smoky haze over the fact that there is so much underdevelopment in the country, because you see the highlights of the R&D and the innovation and so on, but you wouldn't see that huge degree of underdevelopment, which takes us to to the South African scenario, where we have this dual economy, which has sometimes been described as. And perhaps we do need to look at another basket of indicators that then starts to profile any development, any shift in growth and development in our second economy sector, in the underdeveloped segment. But you wouldn't be measuring R&D, because R&D doesn't happen there. And we're measuring R&D by people who are actually the users, the beneficiaries. But I believe that is another debate that needs to be opened. The question of what we're going to do about the fact that we're not meeting the target. This is, as I reflected, something that's concerning the minister quite considerably, to the point where she has put in place this review committee. Because she wants to get to a point where she knows what discourse she must have with the private sector. She wants to know what discourse must she have with the government science system. And can we do something? What are the options? I think a pretty critical weakness that is being interrogated is the coordination across the entire science system. And if perhaps with different mode of operation from our current governance system, where only a few science councils report to the minister, will there be a different kind of structure which will then give us more discretion, the ability to change the way some of the other institutions are operating, as well as the levels of funding that Treasury provides. But these are the kind of answers that the minister is looking for, and which she will take up through this committee. The recent chair on statistics, I'm ashamed to admit, and again, it's not a reflection on Godfrey's and my performance. We're just the messengers. We awarded the chair through the usual NRS process of awarding chairs. And the professor who was supposed to take up the chair then informed the university that he was no longer available. And so the position of the head of that chair has not been filled, and therefore it's been difficult to actually take on students. I don't know if there's any further developments, Godfrey.
Actually, in the one University of Cape Town, the other one in Victoria. But besides this, there are engagements that we are already having with the various other centers, the Gaius University, Vestige School, the University of Funny University of Technology, and the University of Stellenbosch. There are initiatives that are underway to actually revise this process. There are already students, we just don't, may not have the numbers now. We can get the numbers and provide data.
Are we saying you've got 2 weeks in Nari in Mosul, or is it just 1 week?
Chairs, the awarded chairs. But because of the difficulty in filling at each of these universities, the actual professors, research professor chairs, we are now looking at a virtual model, where we mobilize across all of South Africa's universities. Because, you know, the new system where you could actually lecture to students, even though they are remotely based. So we're drawing in, because there's expertise, at Chwane, at Wits, and I think, isn't it Stellenbosch?
Stellenbosch.
Okay. So in other words, we're trying other means of getting these chairs operating. That one again? Okay, the R&D Tax Incentives Report, yes, that one is overdue, and we've actually just taken it through the stages of getting it accepted by the Minister, as well as it's on its way through to Cabinet. Yes, and then it's on our agenda. We know we had promised it earlier, but it's on our agenda to bring through to Parliament. And the results are a lot more promising. There's been a much more aggressive drive through DSC. Godfrey in particular has been leading that in terms of engaging with the private sector. It's quite true that some of them had found the application form a bit cumbersome, but that is because they had not, had much training, and subsequently the form has been made more user-friendly. The form is now accepted by a far larger number of private companies, and we are finding in other engagements with the private sector a completely different reason as to why they haven't taken up the incentive. One of them is predominantly in the mining sector, where in terms of eligibility, a substantial amount of investigative work translated into research in prospecting, in early stage geological surveying and so on, is not eligible for the R&D tax incentive. The way we have defined it currently is that the incentive is for R&D that can be directly seen to enhance your income from products that you are currently manufacturing. So it's more manufacturing based than it is in terms of R&D that gives you a baseline set of data, because that's what prospecting does. It simply gives you baseline data that determines whether you're going to undertake R&D on a particular mineral deposit and so on. Now, we have established also that there are a number of other countries where this type of R&D is actually supported. So we are redesigning our guideline framework with South African Revenue Services and National Treasury to see whether we can accommodate other fields of exploration and so on. That would be consistent to the kind of incentives that other countries are giving their companies, and particularly with mining still being such an important economic activity in the country. There's another response that has come through where there's an indication that one of the qualifying criteria on calculating the claim actually disadvantages the company, in that if they are already receiving an incentive from the state, they must take the total quantum of research that is performed, they must subtract the state's proportion of the contribution, that double that amount, and then it leaves them with a very negligible amount to actually claim against. And so they feel that for the effort in completing these forms and applying, it's not worth it. But the critical thing to know is they are already receiving most likely up to 50% or more of funding support from the government. So there we are not going to actually try to adjust it to allow them to claim more, because then they could have 100% of their research funded by government. And we have to actually test the effectiveness of this instrument before we actually look at increasing the impact it's going to have on the revenue base, because this is tax revenue that we forego as a country. Yes, Godfrey.
The issue of the incentive being too bureaucratic is something that we are also paying attention to. They understand with them, because every engaged with them, both, you know, different types of them. They are first-time users of the program. They are those that are coming for the second or third time. They are large and small, with different levels of implications internally of reporting. So the first few years of the program, what one, especially for first-timers, you find that they have to actually align their internal reporting system with the information requirements of the program, and that's normal what needs to happen so that they comply. But the other issues, which is something that we need to address with the firm, to say how much information and what kind of support do we provide to first-time applicants to the program to be able to access with no problem. The other level would be of companies that just generally struggle to claim later. The R&D tax incentive later. So that's a different type of problem that we are engaging already with. We've been engaging with National Treasury National Treasury primarily as to what needs to be done in that respect. Are there things that we need to, amendments that we need to be looking at, and exploring a number of options, and then we will be pushing together proposals in due course to respond to that aspect. The reason for the delay, I wanted to explain that the first report that we tabled in Parliament, the 2007-08 report, I was actually covering a period since the inception of the program, that was September 2008. It was not only a year, it was more than a year. I noting that the first year of the program, we did not receive a lot. The first application that we received was actually a year later, in November 2007. So a lot more awareness needed to be created and firmed. So what we did was that, having included the 2008 information on the prior year, on the 7-8 report, the rest of the year, of 6 months, from September to October to February the following year, is included on the 9-10 report. So during this time, we had gone through a process with SAS to actually reconcile data, because there are two sets of information that companies submit to access the program. One to SAS, one to the GST. And then we have been battling to reconcile the two databases in the two departments due to some of the administrative requirement for confidentiality on the part of SAS and us as to can we share information. So we have been trying to break down those barriers and say, can we come to a point where we are able to reconcile information from the two organizations and be able to produce a report that actually articulates the uptake of the program, not only the uptake of the program, but also the level of expenditure and the R&D tax, the tax overall as well due to the implementation of this program. And up to now, we haven't really been able to do that. Even the new report, there has been delays. Even the new report that we'll produce now might not include the aspect of what is the actual R&D tax foregone, because a scientist is doing an overall work which is led by the Minister of Trade of Finance to quantify the tax expenditure on the all the R&D, all the tax-based incentives, including the R&D tax incentives. So we are going to be getting that data in due course, and we will send it back to the previous year and be able to give a more comprehensive report. What I'm saying in short is that there has been...
Very good, we can, in good time, we can put it already. I still continue.
I'd like to touch on one thing, and to indicate to the members that we will always have these types of delays. We have to be honest about this. If we were to have a situation where a new tax allowance was brought in by the fiscal authority, you would find that you've got to wait to the end of the year before you can actually fully claim it back, especially if it's an allowance. And so even though it was introduced in November 2006, no company could actually go and get some money from SARS, you know, claim it back. We had to wait for the financial year to end. And then you also had a matter where different companies have different financial years. So there's that disparity in reporting. And so it's far more easier if we almost report every 2 years because then you can do the kind of reconciliation you're talking about. They also disclose information to the tax man, and what they give us in terms of our form, our administrative form, may not necessarily be the same. And so these are teething problems for a very new instrument that we will have to be addressing. So we regret, we do apologize for the delay in that, but there are a couple of things that we're trying to sort out. With the issue of this target that is now being confirmed as a target, the target appeared in the medium-term expenditure framework, which is an official government document, but not as a firm target, as a recommendation that we should actually be increasing the level of R&D closer to the OECD average, which is much higher than the target that we're actually seeing now. So it was described as an aspirational target, particularly because it said we should be doing it, and this is more or less where it should be, in line with the OECD one. When the minister took up her portfolio, she committed that she would be growing. Her intent is to grow this and to accept that as a 1.5% as a target, which has now been firmly articulated in terms of the hard delivery agreement that has been signed across the portfolios of a number of ministers. So this is why we can actually describe it now as an official target. I would also like to just, some of the others we can respond through the formal channels that we have between the committee and the DSD. But I would like to point out that there are two different base years that have been used in our presentations on tracking investments in R&D. The one is the 2000 base year, which is in the set of slides that we have here. And there you've got a different inflation rate that is actually utilized. And then just as we hit publication and endorsement by the Statistics in general that we could publish this report, their advice was to us to revise, to use the base year that they now using, which is the 2008 one. And so we accommodated that. We must in future not use the 2000 year. We must use the 2008 as a base year for calculating the constant rand figure. And there you see the different shape of the curve. It relates to inflation based against the 2008 rand. And remember, this is a period where we've seen inflation targeting and so on. So and concerns about the inflation rate. We're going to see a different picture. Because inflation has been actually coming down. So this is the nature of statistics, and there's a lot, you know, that we can read behind these figures. I think the full-time equivalent and unemployment rate, I think that is something we can deal with at another time. The agriculture and the different areas, I have not seen Dave's report. But I think a large percentage of the R&D in the agricultural sector is driven by the private sector rather than the government sector. And it relates to primarily your large export areas, which is, let's say, your fruit industry, your wine industry, and so on. And areas that are critical in terms of national issues, challenges on food security and animal health and so on. Those are the ones where you most likely, I haven't seen the report, but I would suspect that those are the areas where you find there are gaps and it should actually be increased. Chair, I think I've responded to your point indicating that yes, a lot of this is Western tools that we've been using, and I agree that these are not just old, but they are strong roots that most countries are utilizing, but there's a different development challenge which we have not been looking at, and that we need to look at indicators in that area. The proposals to address the situation, once again, I refer you to the fact that there is something underway, and I can't preempt what the minister, you know, is going to be presenting to you on after having received a report from this review committee, because that should start to inform our choices on how we're going to deal in future on the human capital development side. Because it's a question of the instruments we've got in place working. Are they good enough? Is this research chair instrument, or do we need something more? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I'm sure in the future when you come here, you'll appreciate that members prepare themselves. You can see. So you need to really prepare when you come here, you see. We don't just slide on pages. We read and try to analyze what's happening. We can see how members can pick up any small error. So that's one of the important things about this committee. And that is why, actually, the record of the department to the Auditor General is always having such a clean recommendation. It is an example of many departments. But it is because our members here prepare themselves. That's very important. And the recommendations we are doing, when we go on our sites overseas, we look at standards. We are not saying what we are saying just from nowhere, simply because we want to have an international way of doing things. It's because we have seen other standards other than OECD working far perfectly also. And so we need to see which ones could be also the best tools for us as a developing country, rather than taking every ready-made thing from a developed world perspective. So it's very important that you look at the internet. Also, what you mentioned, that this provides a tool for the most user beneficiaries, is us. Indeed it is. Because it is from this that we're able to analyze where we're going, and we're able, therefore, to whip the correct direction. Now, one of the things you said is that we need to also to deal with, especially in terms of human capital. We have actually initiated joint programs with relevant departments, with portfolio committees, like training, industry, education, higher education, in order exactly to tap into all these imbalances and try to have some joint direction. That's what we're already doing. So we will continue to do this. But you see, what you presented today, as one member said, is a very highly technical area, and there is nothing you can reduce it from that. It is exactly like this. So we have actually reduced it, because if we would go very deep, we'd be even far more technical than we are today. So your duty is that you must look at it very thoroughly and simplify it to look so that it can be policy user friendly. Yes. So I think those are a few comments that I can say on behalf of this committee. But otherwise, thank you very much for all the presentation that you have done. It was a good start. Thank you very much. I think the committee has done.
Thank you.